Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Cheryl. And we are here for a one-hour webinar on self-trust and self-love during the holidays. Today is November 11th, 2019. Very happy to be here with you. I'd like to explain what to expect over the next hour. Many of you have been on my calls before and have been on my 30-day courses before, so this will be familiar. But many of you are brand new to my work and new to my calls, and so it's nice to know what to expect, especially for those of us who are prone to anxiety. Expectations are one of the ways that we feel like we're in a little bit more control. So I always start my calls with a one-minute opportunity to be in silence together. This is a transitional time that marks the rest of your day or evening from this next hour, and it is really an invitation as much for me as for you to come down out of the headspace, follow your breath, and come into your body, where your emotions, where your vulnerability, where your wisdom and your self-trust live. So you will hear a gong at the beginning and the end of that minute, and I also end the call with that same invitation. I then give a teaching, which generally is about 20 to 30 minutes, and then I open it up to you, and that is your time to connect with me, ask questions, share experiences, share comments. In order to let me know that you have a question or would like to connect, you press star 2 on your keypad, and that will show up on my screen. Sometimes I see a name, sometimes I don't. I will not identify you. This is an anonymous space for you, and I say that because it takes a lot of courage to speak up on a group call, whether there's 3 people or 300 people, it doesn't matter. It takes courage to share what is real. It takes courage to find your voice and to use your voice. So you can share your name if you would like, but you don't have to. And this is a very, very, very safe space. My calls are populated by a bunch of people just like you, introverted or extroverted, but often quite sensitive, conscientious, highly attuned, highly empathic. So you are in very good, safe company. If you are on the webcast, which I see a bunch of you on, you will not be able to ask questions, just so you know. And there is another way to access the call, which you should have received in one of the pre-call emails. But the majority of you are on the right line, so you can stay where you are. So it's star 2, and you can raise your hand at any time. You don't have to wait for the question and answer section, and it's not so much answers because I don't presume to have many of those. It's just really an opportunity to connect and go underneath the stories together and perhaps receive a bit of guidance, mostly coming into your own awareness of your own guidance, which is largely what I teach in my work and in my courses. So that is the structure. For those of you who are just joining, welcome. We will be starting with 1 minute of turning inward. It will be a minute of silence. And it's really just a gentle invitation to notice what arises in the space of silence and stillness. We spend so much of our lives moving very quickly, and the pace is about to pick up in this holiday season. And one of the biggest gifts we can give to ourselves is the gift of slowing down, the gift of stillness, and the gift of silence. And yes, you have to be willing to feel whatever arises in that space of stillness and silence, because busyness is a fabulous way of distracting and numbing and anesthetizing And the culture is going to encourage you to do that at every turn, always, and especially this time of year when actually the true invitation from an archetypal perspective is exactly the opposite, which is to wind down, to slow down, to turn inward. So even when we can just give ourselves this 1 minute, 1 minute of a pause, what Tara Brach calls the sacred pause, it is a gift. So again, you will hear the gong at the beginning and the end of the minute. Another few moments to notice any differences that you feel inside after spending a minute in stillness. I always notice that my voice slows down after that minute. I feel more grounded. I also feel more aware of what's happening internally. And with that awareness, I can then make choices for how to respond to whatever arises. And the response that we want to start to wire ourselves toward is one of moving toward whatever comes up inside, especially emotionally and with our thoughts. And from there, we have another choice point, what to do next, how to respond next. So just noticing gently, without judgment or agenda, what you are feeling right now. And breathing into that. Our habit is to push it away, to breathe into the feelings or the sensations and even the thoughts, those compelling thoughts. So I'm going to start by talking about an overview of this time of year. When we have context, again, it helps with the anxious mind, it helps our anxiety to understand where we are in time and space and what's happening in the ether, in the atmosphere right now. It is a very activating and potent time of year, this time of autumn in this hemisphere. I know you are not all experiencing autumn at the moment. Spring is similar in its activation. But it's a time of change wherever you are on the globe. November moving into Thanksgiving in this part of the world, and then Christmas and whatever holidays you celebrate or don't celebrate. It is the holiday season. We can't avoid that. And the expectation all around you is to feel joy, joy, and more joy. And gratitude, as in the joyful kind. And there's another kind of gratitude, which I will talk about. But we are a happy face addicted culture It is really the only acceptable emotion. It's happy, happy, happy. So much of my early work was around the wedding transition and the expectation of unilateral happiness and bliss that the culture sends out around that transition. But it's really around any holiday, transition, birthdays, large and small, we are expected to feel happy. And yet, there are all of these other emotions that are being stirred up and activated. And the body remembers. The body remembers the emotions. The body remembers anniversaries. The body remembers loss. The body remembers transitions from the past that weren't fully processed and resolved and felt, because we are not a culture that guides us through transitions at all. It drops us over the cavernous abyss of every transition. And so this time of year, which is such a liminal time, such an in-between time, very groundless time, and if you are feeling any of that, you are completely attuned, tapped in to the archetypal elements of this time. Whether autumn or spring, it's a time of activation and groundlessness. So the body remembers unprocessed, unresolved transitions, losses, breakups, deaths, endings. And this has been coming through in all of my groups that I lead, my small coaching groups, my larger groups, my forums, with my individual clients. Layers and layers and layers of grieving a loss. And the question that comes up always is, why am I not over this by now? What's wrong with me? It's a shame-based culture question fueled by the culture that has a very specific timeline for grieving. It's like tapping on its watch. Aren't you done grieving yet? It's been a week. It's been a month. It's been a year. It's been 5 years. Whatever it is the culture is telling you, whatever you are still grieving, the culture tells you, it's been too long and you should be over it by now. But that's not how grief works. Grief is not linear. Grief has its own timeline. It has nothing to do with technology or watches or months. It has its own circular and spiral timeline, and it's layers of grief, layers. And so while we get to a point of completion around a particular loss, it will still come up as the body remembers, as an anniversary arises, and often you are feeling the grief before you even consciously know and remember that it's an anniversary. That happens to me almost every year with my grandmother's death in spring. I will start to feel unsettled, ungrounded. I'll start to feel that sadness in my heart. If I don't name it, it comes out as irritation, as pushing my loved ones away, pushing away my husband, my son, until I dial back in, until I breathe into my heart, into my body, until I name, oh, it's the end of April. That's when she died. And then the tears, which are the medicine, and we allow the pain to move through. Except when we don't. And then it morphs and it comes out sideways and backwards in all kinds of much more unpleasant ways than just allowing ourselves to cry or to write a letter or to move in some way. There are many ways to grieve. It's not just crying. But allowing the pain is an act of self-love. So when I talk about self-love and when I teach about self-love, as I do in my Trust Yourself course, such a big part of it is in allowing our emotional lives to arise and to be met with compassion, with tenderness. So I don't think it's possible to move through this time of year without some pain arising, a pain of who's missing, the pain of what's missing, some connection that you are longing for. Right? And the work of self-trust and self-love is to trust what arises, to love what arises, which means moving toward it, which means welcoming in the pain, welcoming in the longing, sitting beside it, making a place for it at the holiday table. Ritualizing it in some way, making it visible in some way. And what we don't learn is that the more we make space for what's difficult, the more we open up the channels and portals and pathways to true joy, to true gratitude, not the type that's plastered on because we think that's what we're supposed to be feeling right now, but a true sense of well-being, that the pain is the doorway into the joy. So is there magnificent potential in this time of year for joy and gratitude? Yes, it's there. But it's not going to work to expect yourself and make yourself feel that. It doesn't work that way. So that's an overview. That's a context for what is stirring and brewing underneath the surface during this time of year. In some ways, it's always stirring and brewing. In some ways, we are always in some kind of transition, but it's not always in this collective way where there is this massive cultural expectation to be joyful and grateful. Now, let's talk a little bit about gratitude because it is one of the most powerful practices we have. But not in the way that I think we are typically taught to be grateful in this sort of forced way again. The way that I teach gratitude and the way that I practice gratitude is in the model of Brother David Steindl-Rast, who teaches that we can be grateful for the opportunity, which means we can be grateful even when it feels hard, that we are grateful for the opportunity to, within that hardness, within that pain, to move toward it, to grow, to soften our hearts. It's an extraordinary practice. It's an extraordinary mindset, way of thinking about gratitude that helps us shift, again, from the habit, the habitual mindset that says, push away everything hard, yuck, ouch, that hurts, push it away, get that away from me. And if you could see me right now, you'd see my arm making the push away gesture. Go away, pain, I don't like you. Right? To one that says, oh, okay, I don't have to like this. It doesn't feel great, but there's an opportunity here. There is an opportunity to learn, to grow, to soften, to heal. And it seems to be that it is through our most challenging experiences that we grow the most, or at least have the opportunity, the potential to grow. So it's a practice that I encourage you to try this time of year. Yes, focus on what you are naturally and truly grateful for, those things that spring spontaneously off of your lips, and then go deeper. And then go deeper and see what happens and be curious about what arises. So let's talk a little bit more about feelings, about what it means to be with difficult feelings, difficult emotions. The ego wants to fix and solve immediately. Well, then how do I fix it? That's the problem. What do I do? What do I do with the pain? And the interesting thing about pain is that there really is nothing to do with it. It's not about doing. It's about being. It's about naming it and being with it. And asking the pain, how can I serve you? What is a creative expression that might come from this pain? It's making friends with it. It's befriending it. Remembering that it's not, we can't approach pain so that we get to the joy, but when we do meet the pain fully, we open naturally. That, in fact, being with the pain itself is some form of joy. It's not separate. We spend so much time resisting the pain, avoiding it, going up into our head, telling ourselves stories, scrolling, texting, eating, shopping. And again, that's going to ramp up this time of year. You are going to feel more and more compelled to externalize and to distract because you are being encouraged to do so. When the invitation and the remedy is the exact opposite, is to recognize how compelling those distractions and addictions are. And they work for a little while. And then to see if you can make a different choice in that moment. To say, what is needed? What is happening inside? How can I be with this uncomfortable feeling? How can I be with my hurting heart? How can I be with my longing? Can I be curious about what is arising? What is my body remembering? What breakup? What loss? What death? What divorce? And not to minimize any of it. So one of the keys to maintaining your groundedness, your sanity, your well-being, whether it's during the holiday season or any other time, is finding the willingness and the commitment to carve out time every day to turn inward. This is a basic tenet for well-being. It's a principle and a tool and an action that I teach in all of my courses, especially in my Trust Yourself course. And it is especially important during this season so that you allow in and you make the space. We can't feel if we are running at the pace of the culture. We will be perpetually outrunning the feelings. Feelings are slow. They are moon-like. They are connected to the night. It's often why people struggle with insomnia. That's the only time your psyche can get your attention, is in the middle of the night when everything has shut down and slowed down and silenced and there's no place else to run. So one of the remedies in insomnia is a whole other conversation, and it's complicated often, but one of the remedies is to make time during the day so that psyche doesn't have to wake you up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. at the witching hour, which is when psyche likes to do that. And I am very familiar with that witching hour, very familiar. And it's always a sign to me, perhaps I'm not giving myself enough attention during the day to slow down those morning and evening liminal times, which are so potent. The time before bed, how am I spending that? Am I filling my well of self with nourishing waters? Or am I sitting there on my phone, which will never nourish, ever? So that's the context. That's a very brief primer on being with emotions. Again, none of this is simple. None of this is easy. If you are newer to self-work, being with your emotions is not likely going to be something that is easy for you to do. We have all been conditioned out of that. It has not been role modeled for us. We don't see what that looks like growing up, how to be with our big feelings in a responsible way. Most people carry a lot of shame beliefs about their feelings. Feelings are wrong, it's bad, it's evidence of badness, I'm too much, I'm too sensitive, get over it. The things that you hear, that you heard growing up, are still living inside of you and are probably what you are saying to yourself. So that's often the first step toward thawing out those frozen passageways, is to explore what are the beliefs that I'm carrying about emotions. Okay, the third piece I want to offer is about what does it mean to take loving care of yourself during this time of year, and always, especially this time of year. The choices that you make regarding what you say yes to, what you say no to, everything from gift giving and receiving to holiday events, it comes from being with the feelings. It comes from getting to know yourself a little bit more, and you have time to do that, and starting to bring an attitude of kindness to yourself. And so it's knowing yourself and loving yourself, which results in more self-trust. So from that place of self-trust, you will more naturally be able to navigate your way through this season, which means making choices that are aligned with who you are, with your temperament, with your needs. For example, if you are a highly sensitive person and you know you get overwhelmed at holiday gatherings, what are some things that you can do to reduce the overwhelm and the overstimulation? Can you go for a shorter amount of time? Can you say no to most of the gatherings and pick and choose very mindfully? If you are at an event and you're overwhelmed, can you step into a quiet corner? Can you go to the bathroom? I'm a big fan of frequent bathroom breaks for highly sensitive people. Bathrooms are your friends at big gatherings. Oh, how much time I've spent, extra time, much longer than I needed to go to the bathroom, to sit in that lovely, quiet spot and gather myself and breathe and take some deep breaths and be kind. The way you would with a child who is feeling overwhelmed and overstimulated. And if you have a child who is highly sensitive, you will see that. And I encourage you to trust that your child is having a completely appropriate response given their wiring and their temperament. How many times we left gatherings because our sons or one of them was completely overwhelmed and it was just too much, and that's okay. It's not okay in the mainstream cultural eyes. That is an extroverted, what's wrong with you, can't you, keep going and keep going and keep going, mindset. That's the cultural mindset. But it's a very broken and very limited mindset. That's fine if that's the way that you run and you love it and you're the life of the party. But that's not the way everybody is wired. And so it is okay to say, thank you so much, we need to go now. And we've done that more times than I can count. And so if you don't have kids, it's being that way for your own self. I'm going to close out this section of the call, and then I will open it up to you. And I do see a hand raised, which is great, and I encourage other hands to go up because we will have time for probably three or four questions. I might wait to read this until we close out. I will do that so that we can turn to you. Tired of hearing myself speak. So I am going to turn to you. hand raised in California. Hello. If you raise your hand, you just have to say hello because there's no other way to know if it's you or not. But it's a hand in La Jolla, California. At least that's where the cell phone is. Hello? I cannot hear you if you are in La Jolla or your cell phone is and you had your hand raised. I would love to connect, but I'm not hearing anything. Let me go ahead and try to unmute you again. Hello? Okay. Maybe you changed your mind. Okay. So, right now there are no hands raised. I would love to connect with you. It is usually the juiciest and most alive parts of these calls when we can connect voice to voice. Okay, I'm going to somebody in Iowa, I believe. Hello? Oops, I got unmuted. Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, I can. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I just had a question as far as like tuning into yourself. I find that I get really overwhelmed with like all of the practices that I want to do in the morning, but I know I only have like a certain amount of time. Like for instance, like meditation and trying to journal with inner child and doing yoga. And so I find myself wanting to do all those things and then getting anxious if I don't complete those things because I want to get them all done. So I just didn't know if you could speak a little bit more to like tuning inward and kind of navigating that part and just talking about all those different types of exercises.
Yes. Great question. Thank you. And so it sounds to me like what's really arising is your perfectionist that comes down on you if you don't complete all of them. And it's really easy for the perfectionist to get activated around self-healing work. And when that voice comes up, I encourage my clients to then move toward that voice and get into dialogue with that voice. Because if you're doing all of those things to try to check them off your list and to feel good and say, okay, I did everything, and now I'm good, you're sort of subverting the process. The work is first and foremost about being very gentle with ourselves and knowing that even if you do one of those for 2 minutes with the mindset of gentleness, it's going to be more effective than doing all of them with the perfectionist at the helm, that taskmaster that's kind of whipping you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you notice that voice come in, it's the time to say, oh, there's the perfectionist. Maybe the one thing I do this morning is to journal and dialogue with that part of me for 5 or 10 minutes and see if I can bring a more gentle and forgiving mindset to myself. Does that
okay,
make sense?
Great. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, let me head back over to my screen here. Okay, I'm going to try to unmute the caller in California again, see if you want to speak. Are you there? Nope? Okay. So what tends to happen on these calls is we get to the last 10 minutes and a whole bunch of hands go up and I don't have time to answer. So I know it takes courage to raise your hand. I know you have questions. And it can be about anything. And now I see a bunch of hands going up, which is great. It can be about anything. It can be about the holidays or not. It can be about self-trust. It can be about your inner work. It can be about my Trust Yourself course, which is coming up on Saturday. Okay, here we go. In Boston, hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Hi. So I always tell myself, oh, I'm going to like meditate or I'm going to read. Like I have really bad ADD. I'm always running around. I can never sit still. Always have social plans, always working. I work nonstop. What do you suggest for someone like me? And I always watch, like I use scrolling on Instagram and television as my way to unwind, which I'm really trying not to do. It's a terrible habit, and I think I'm addicted to it. So what would you recommend, I guess, someone trying, like myself, trying to change that bad habit?
So the first thing I would suggest is to inquire with a great deal of curiosity into the resistance that is preventing you from stopping. What is the fear around stopping? And so there is some story you're telling yourself, like this is just the way I'm wired and I have lots of those and I do this and I do that. But to some degree, I'm sure that's just who you are. And there is probably some element of resistance, of what am I afraid will happen when I stop, when I slow down? Because we stay busy for a reason. We stay working and socializing as a way to distract. And then we can distract ourselves all the way into sleep these days. There are 1,000 ways to distract. And it's really easy to do so. But if you go underneath that and you get curious into what is going on inside that I am afraid of, what am I afraid will happen if not? That's
okay.
The place to start.
Yeah, I have thought about that before, so that's pretty deep. I guess I'll have to think about that.
It's my work is deep. My work is not about strategies and formulas. It's not about do this for 5 minutes and then do that for 5 minutes. It's about getting underneath, because we are ruled by our unconscious forces 80% of the time. So if you look at your behavior, and then you say, this is at cross purposes to what I want to be doing, but yet I keep doing it. Then you have to go deeper to ask, what am I afraid of if I stop?
Okay.
And that's your starting point.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Good. Now there's like tons of hands raised. So let's see how far we can get. Hello. I'm not even sure where you are calling from. If you raise your hand, just say hello. And if it's
hello?
Him, I will hello.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Oh, it's me. Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Good. How are
Hi.
You?
Hi. Good. Thank you.
Good. I was wondering, because there's a lot of, when we talk about self-trust in the moment that we make decisions, I have a tendency, I've been doing a lot of inner work around the breakup and everything, so I've been trying to, how can I say this? Okay, so I make a decision or I make a call on something, and at the moment I feel at peace with it. But then I start to have all these thoughts running through my mind, like, you made a mistake. That wasn't the right choice. And it clouds that sense of maybe peace that I had when I made my first decision.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And I don't know how to go around that, because I then get a little paralyzed. Because I don't know how to feel, or whether if my first feeling was right and I kind of, you know, made the best choice for me at that moment, or if this, all of these other thoughts are valid. I guess would be the question.
So what you're describing is self-doubt that comes in.
You trust
yourself in the moment, and self-doubt comes in. And self-doubt is a headspace. And it's a distraction as well. So many ways that we distract. One of the ways we distract is by going up into our heads and ruminating and second-guessing and worrying. And we do that as a way to try to protect and avoid the painful feelings. And so you are processing a breakup. You are in transition. Those things are going to be swirling around inside of you. As soon as you go into that headspace of self-doubt, you are covering over, you are protecting, you are avoiding from avoiding the more difficult, vulnerable feelings in your body. And so if you imagine going up into the headspace versus coming down into the heart and into the body, and to see what happens next time you're in the self-doubt, to say, this is my self-doubt, to name it.
Okay.
And then to say, what are these thoughts protecting me from feeling? That is the cut-through question for intrusive thoughts or stories, or any time we're ruminating on that hamster wheel, going around and around and around. What are these thoughts? What is this thought protecting me from feeling? If I wasn't caught up in that headspace, what would I be feeling? And if you can come back down into your heart and into your body and feel the headspace, and the intensity of it will lessen and often dissolve completely.
Okay. Sounds great. I'll definitely try that. Yeah, it makes sense. Thank you very much.
Good. You're welcome. Okay, moving right along is New York City. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I'm so happy to speak to you. I'm so grateful for you. Okay.
Hi.
Here's my question. So I find myself regularly trying to guess what other people are feeling and thinking before they tell me. And it's exhausting, but I do it, and I do it a lot. I do it to stay in connection, it feels like, with people. And there are all these layers where I'm trying to guess what someone is thinking and feeling, and then they tell me what they're thinking and feeling, and then I have to figure out what I'm thinking and feeling and then express that. And then there's this other piece of it where sometimes some people do expect you to know what they're thinking and feeling, and that's really hard. And I'm just curious about any wisdom you might be able to share on how to, you know, I don't always catch myself doing this. You know, it's not until much later that I realize I've kind of twisted or kind of like maneuvered myself in a way in relation to someone just to keep the connection and it's not necessarily good, but it's out of a fear of losing this person. And it's not really about me being truthful with myself. I hope this is all clear.
Completely.
So, okay. So, Mike, that is essentially, like, what's happening, and I'm curious about what you think, or if there are ways that I could perhaps stop myself from doing it before I do it.
So, yeah. The way I work, as I said to a previous caller, is going into the root. There are probably techniques and strategies for working in the moment, but I'm much more interested in what is fueling that habit. And it sounds to me that what's fueling it is the fear of losing the person. That's what you're saying. It's the fear of losing the connection, the fear of losing the person, that if I don't get this right, if I don't anticipate what they're thinking and feeling, if I don't read their mind, if I don't, then I'm going to lose the connection, and I might even lose the person completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's being fueled by a very, it sounds to me, a very old probably a very familiar and a very painful place inside it, of needing to do it right so that you are liked and loved, so that you don't lose love. And that would be the place to pour a lot of energy. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does. Yes.
So yeah. There's no quick fixes. There's no quick fixes to any of this. That's probably one of your deepest wounds, is I have to do it right to be loved, or however you would formulate that wound, that belief. And then it's working with that and exploring that and parsing that apart and pouring that light of curiosity and compassion onto that very old, painful place inside of you. I think of these core wounds like these big orbs. We have 5 or 6 of these orbs. We all have them. And they are fueled often by a belief like this. I have to do it right to be loved. I have to read minds to be loved. And we work with these in layers and spirals, right, until we arrive eventually at the core. Right? And we explode open that belief and replace it with something different and something true.
That's beautiful. Absolutely. Thank you. And I've been finding myself, as I explore this more, the response that I have to others who outside of me do expect me to read their minds or know, it's almost as if, like, if someone were to have said that to me in the past, I would have been very, said, like, you should know this. And I would kind of freeze a little bit and get very scared. And the more that I work on this, I realize the more I'm able to say, just calmly just say, kind of set a boundary, but in a kind way. Not all the time by any means, but I'm realizing maybe that that's also your answer is also the answer to that as well, right? The more I look into this, the more I'll be able to actually just kind of not even mind that someone is expecting me to know things. There's no way for me to know. So.
Yes, and you will be able to speak up more in the moment and say, well, I'm sorry, but there's no way to know that. And that is not what good relationships are based on, is the ability to read each other's minds and feelings. But you will also heal more and more at the root in that place of where there's a faulty belief in there that is then fueling that action inside of you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Cheryl. I appreciate you deeply.
You're so welcome. Okay. Thank you all so far. We still have time, and I will continue going through the list. There's no way that I'm going to be able to get to all of you now, but I very much appreciate all of your questions. I so appreciate connecting with you, and we will just keep going and see how far we can get. Okay, this is Virginia. Hello. Hello, Charlottesville, Virginia. That's your cell phone or your number.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh. Thank you.
Hi. Well,
hi. Thank you.
Hi, doggy.
I'm so sorry about him. He gets a little confused when I talk on the phone.
Oh, you don't have to apologize. He's welcome.
Thank you. I have a question about how you keep your own inner parent at the home when you're home for the holidays and stop assuming responsibility for other people's happiness. It's something I really struggle with when I get around my family. I mean, they're lovely people. It's just that I have a tendency to kind of reassume a childhood role.
We become 16 or 13 or 7 when we go back to our childhood homes. So that's pretty much true across the board for most people. So to just know that, to normalize that for you. And the recommendation I have is to take as much time as you can and as much time as you need each day that you are there to be in your own space, to do whatever you do that grounds you and reconnects you to your core self. Whatever practices you have, if any, or if not, now is the time to start them. So that you can bring those with you. And like I spoke about a bit earlier in the call, when we are connected to ourselves, when we have that grounding cord of self-trust, we make decisions and choices and actions from there, from that place. And so that is the place from which we can set loving boundaries. That is the place from which we can say, I need to take a couple of hours and go for a walk by myself. That is the place in which we say, you know what, this really isn't working out too well. I'm going to leave early. I'm going to go home. I'm going to get on a different flight. And this is the place in which we say, you know, I love my family. They're wonderful, but I realize I have so much more work to do so that I can stay in a more grounded place, and that's okay. And recognizing that, naming that, bringing self-compassion to that place, again, knowing that you are far from alone, it is so easy to regress when we go back into that constellation. And so just having the mindset of self-compassion alongside for the journey will help you tremendously.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. You all have such quick questions. Usually I spend a lot more time connecting, so feel free to ask follow-up questions. Feel free to say, I'm not quite sure what that means. Feel free to question me. You know, my work is not quick fix. It's not formulaic. I like to go deep. So don't be afraid to take up some time and space. Okay, there is no name or city for this next person. So you're just going to have to say hello, and then I will say hello back if it's you.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, is it me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
I'm from Philadelphia. I don't know why it doesn't say. But hi. So my question is about people pleasing. I'm noticing I've been doing a lot of the work in your book, so I've noticed that like most of the stuff that I struggle with is due to people pleasing. And I've been telling, you know, I've been acknowledging that, but after that, I think I don't really have the skills to know what to do. So I'll just say something like, well, don't, you shouldn't people please because you're a good person. So don't people please, you know, once I acknowledge it. And I've noticed that that doesn't really do anything. And then I feel a little lost and confused. And it really is getting in the way of like trusting myself and then, you know, my interactions with other people. It's all about the people pleasing, but I don't really know what to do about it. So,
Yes. Can you give me an example of how that shows up?
Yeah. So, my girlfriend, like, I'll call her and assume that I am bothering her. And then, you know, she doesn't, I don't know if this is a good example, but like basically every interaction I have, I've noticed that I feel like I'm imposing and I have to be perfect in the interaction or the person will really not like me, which I know is not 100% true. But yeah, today I called her, I had to call her multiple times. And by the end of the third call, I just felt like, you know, right when I answered the call, I said, sorry, it's just going to be a minute. I'm just here to say la, la, la. You know, like I need to be perfect in every interaction. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, that sounds like a very small thing, but it's like every thing throughout the day.
Oh, it does not sound like a small thing. It's a great example. And it's similar to the conversation I had with the previous caller in terms of feeling like I have to do it right in order to be liked. And so yours is I have to be perfect in every interaction or I won't be loved, right? Or this person will leave. and it's important to fill in the rest of that sentence. I have to be perfect in every interaction, otherwise, and to fill that in for yourself so that you can start to work with it on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the awareness of it, which is great. That's the first step. Then your mind comes in and says, well, just stop doing it. And, of course, that does not work, right? These are deep-seated patterns and ways of being in the world that you learned a long time ago
mm-hmm.
that need your time, your attention, your curiosity, your compassion. And a lot of what I teach in The Wisdom of Anxiety is calling on those keys, those allies, so that you can start to become intensely curious through journaling. I don't know if you're journaling yet. I'm a big fan of journaling.
Mm-hmm.
And to become curious, asking yourself, where did I learn that? Did I see that modeled? Was that the explicit or the implicit expectation for me growing up? In other words, was that actually said to me, or was that something I just absorbed and assumed? That was because it was in the invisible, it was in the unspoken layer. And as you unpack it and start to look at it straight on at the root, you will then start to bring in a different mindset so that you can question that from that loving parent inside of you that says, is that really true? Well, I know cognitively that that's not true, but on a child level, from my 5-year-old or 7-year-old, it sure feels true. And then it's going back to do that repair work, the time traveling that I talk about in the book, of repairing with that young self, with your loving inner parent at the helm of that journey.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's helpful. I think I have been doing that in certain moments. Some moments are easier for me to say, oh, you're doing this because your mom would make you feel this way. And other things, I think I haven't explored it because I'm very focused on my mom. But actually, I think it's more people in my family. So thank you. I'm gonna journal about it more. I think I'm assuming that my brain is just going to figure it out without kind of delving into it. So.
Yes, and our brains do not figure it out. Our brains get that first piece of information, which is the insight and the awareness. And then the healing happens in the body. It's giving that young self a voice and a space to express what that felt like to be living under that expectation of perfection. And what does perfection mean? And so it's going underneath all of that layer of story into the emotional realm, into the body. It's the scariest place for people to go. It's the place that is most overlooked and bypassed in many forms of therapy, and yet it is where our healing happens. It happens in the body, in the cells, in the reparenting, being with yourself in a different way. And so that's the key for you to take with you. It's not going to change just because you realized it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. We are at the end of our time, and as predicted and suspected, there are many, many, many hands that I have not been able to get to. I will look forward to meeting many of you in my Trust Yourself course. It starts on Saturday. I run it twice a year. It is the course that teaches so many of the tools and mindsets that I've talked about today, of turning inward, carving out time each day, of exploring where self-trust and self-love were ruptured, and then implementing those practices that move you in a different direction and help you recover that place of lost self-trust. I run it twice a year. I will be sending out a final announcement for sign-up on Friday, and it is the place where there will be more live calls, and I will have an opportunity to connect with you and you with me, and there is also a forum where we can connect, and if I don't see you there, I hope I see you somewhere else, wherever our paths may cross. thank you so much for being here. We will close out with 1 minute of silence together. If you can stay longer in the silence, I encourage you to do so. As I said at the beginning of the call, it is one of the most powerful gifts that we can give ourselves, is the gift of silence and stillness. You will hear the gong at the beginning and the end of the minute.